But we commence today's show with Atlantic staff writer Graham Wood, who gives us an insider's view on the Middle East in his new book, The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. Graham Wood, good to have you on the program. How are you today, sir?
Delighted to be here. Nice to talk to you.
Good to have you on. Let me jump right in and make the most of our time. I want to start before I get into your text. Again, it's called The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. Graham, as I mentioned a moment ago, take us inside the Middle East and give us a view that you might not see from the outside, and certainly there is a different view on the inside than there is on the outside. So we'll let Graham unpack that for us as we move forward. But I want to, again, commence this program talking about the news of the day. Again, these student protests, Graham, as you've been following them, I've been following them across the country. They are growing. They are expanding. We mentioned yesterday on this program there are now solidarity camps that students are establishing across various campuses. Columbia is still negotiating with students there to take these tents down or remove some of the tents. It is a developing story, but as I mentioned yesterday, the part about this story that's gaining traction for me is the way the students are tying these protests to a demand for disengagement with Israel when it comes to these arms deals that we have with them. Your thoughts as you've been watching these student protests?
Yeah, so first of all, I'm not just a journalist, I'm an educator, including on one of the campuses that is being most roiled by these protests. That's Yale University. Mm-hmm. So I know students who are in the protests at this very minute and who have been making their voices heard. And, you know, I think there's a lot of large institutions, legacy institutions like Yale, like Columbia, that just didn't realize how seriously students take this issue and really how much their opinions have changed over the years. You know, it's been, I hate to say it, it's been decades since I was a student. And back then there were certainly solidarity campaigns with the Palestinians, but they didn't have the momentum that they've got right now. And I think these universities are realizing a bit late that their students have gone beyond their own views, and they're going to have to, you know, in the future, these students are going to be the donors, they're going to be the trustees, they're going to be the professors. And I think the professors of the present day, myself included, have to kind of get ready for that new generation and new priorities they have.
Since, to your point, you're on the campus of Yale teaching there, tell me about your views, at least, on what you sense regarding the serious nature that these students take these protests. I mean, we'll talk about the opinions changing. I agree with you on that. There's no question about that. And that is a different conversation about what our government ultimately does when the opinions of the demo start to change on this particular policy and on this this relationship. But why are students taking, to your mind, this issue so seriously?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a lot more that one can see right now in terms of what war looks like. You know, I've been a war correspondent in a number of different conflicts over the last 20, 30 years, and it's changed a lot. You know, there are way more images that you can see of this war. And I think a lot of students are able to see that the bloodshed is, to say the least, lopsided. The Palestinians, there's so much more Palestinian death than there is Israeli death. And I think there were a lot of students who were, of course, shocked by what happened on October 7th, which was straightforwardly war crimes by Hamas attacking Israeli civilians. And their horror at that is matched and then exceeded by what they see on the Palestinian side. You know, you can just turn on Al Jazeera, you can turn on your feed of social media, and you see children, you see clearly people who are non-combatants who are dead. And I think it's very easy and appropriate for people to be shocked by this, horrified, and to look for ways for that to change.
Yep.
That is ways that their activism can make a difference in that sphere.
Yep. When we come forward, I want to come to the other point you made, Graham Wood, and that is this notion that opinions about this relationship, what many would describe as a cozy relationship between the U.S. and Israel, and that's putting it mildly, putting it gently and kindly, but opinions about that relationship are in fact changing, and I want to get your view on the long-term impact of these views on this relationship changing in real time. We'll talk about that and then jump straight away into his book, The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. Our guest is Graham Wood, staff writer for The Atlantic. You're listening to him right now on Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Joy.com/joy.
Who do you trust to get at the truth?
Tavis Smiley.
That's who. The conversation continues right now.
It does indeed with Graham Wood, Atlantic staff writer and author of the book, The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. We'll talk about that book in just a second. But Graham, I want to continue just for another minute or two here, our conversation about these student protests, which are becoming hegemonic, it seems, on campuses all across this country. We talked a moment ago about why this issue is resonating in so many ways with this particular generation. And I get that. And more importantly, the Biden administration better get it. They better figure that out between now and November. On the other side, though, you raised this issue of these opinions changing. Clearly, and it's not just these students. I mean, these students are the ones who engage on the front lines of these protests. But the data is pretty incontrovertible that opinions about this relationship in this country have been changing, are in fact changing in real time. What is the long-term consequence, the long-term impact of that reality?
I think we're seeing it. You're right, a very long-term change here, where there was a long time when Americans, when they saw Israel was the way that Americans saw the Middle East, because there were a lot of Americans who migrated to Israel. There was a connection with the United States and the Jewish community because it was a haven for the Jews when they were kicked out of Germany and Europe. And now, of course, America is a much more diverse place. And there's a lot more Americans who know Arabs, know Palestinians, and who don't immediately think of Israel as kind of a little patch of America in the Middle East. And by the way, Israel's changed too. Israel was once, again, dominated by European Jews who had been expelled in the previous decades. And now it's much more dominated by Jews from North Africa, from the Middle East. And they are also less sympathetic to America. So the countries have been kind of drifting apart. And, you know, even before October 7th, you started to see that in the protests that were happening on the streets there. And you're right. The way that this is going to express itself in America is a kind of realignment, one of many realignments that's going to be part of the election to come.
Yeah. It seems to me, and this is my sentiment, I could be wrong about this, you may disagree, but it seems to me that Iran has handed Bibi Netanyahu an opportunity. The question is whether he will find a way to blow it. One could debate, and we don't have the time today, one could debate the response that Israel made the other day. I think all things considered, it was measured. Again, my word, maybe not yours. But it seems to me that Iran has given Bibi Netanyahu an opportunity. What's your view of that, number one? And number two, how do you think he's handling it or not?
Well, Bibi is a master of blowing opportunities. So you put were nice enough to put a question mark about whether he's going to blow it. I think there's a very good chance of that, because he's also a master of saving his own hide. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity that he's been handed by Iran is a reset in this horrible, bloody war that his country has been waging in Gaza in retaliation for the October 7th attack. And he was just handed another enemy. He was handed an attack that he could counter, and that could be a kind of reset to that war, where, you know, he started to find that, remember, Israel's response was through its Arab neighbors who were its friends. And those neighbors are not pleased with what's going on in Gaza either. So it could have been a chance for him to say, all right, we can look at what we've done and maybe do some things to pay back the favor that was paid to us by Jordan, by the Saudis, by the Emiratis. And instead, what he seems to be doing is saying full speed ahead on the war that we were prosecuting in the manner that we were prosecuting it before. So I don't think it's going to we're going to see the change that we wanted. You called his response measured. I think there's a way to see it that way. Absolutely. Iran sent 300 drones and missiles, and Israel sent back, I don't know how many, but not nearly as many. An order of magnitude less. We're talking about less than a dozen. The big difference, of course, is that the Iranian ones didn't hit and the Israeli ones did. Mm-hmm. So I think in this round, one side threw a lot of punches and didn't succeed. The other one threw a few and hit them pretty much squarely on the mark. So the response was very interesting to watch, including by me in Tel Aviv at the time.
Yeah. And I would only say, let me be very clear, I would only say measured comparatively speaking. And that's my point, given the way that they have moved heretofore. That was measured in comparison to the way they behaved inside of Palestine inside of Gaza. But I take your point loud and clear. No need to comment further on that, from my perspective at least. Your book, The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State, as I said earlier, gives us an insider's view of the Middle East. So let me ask you an inside question, which is the way Israelis are protesting inside their own country, what's happening right about now. It is often the case, as you well know, that we get one perspective in this country, particularly when the corporate media is owned by, what, two or three people now. We rarely get a chance to see news from a different perspective. And so give me your sense, or tell us how these protests, we know what the students are doing on campuses in this country. Take me inside of Israel and let me know what their protests are like.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I was in the protests a couple of weeks ago. The protesters who are on the liberal secular side, we'll just leave aside the question of the far left peacenik side. Mm-hmm. Their main hope right now is just that they see the back of the current prime minister, Bibi Netanyahu. They see him as an impediment to any kind of reform, any kind of good governance, and any kind of wrapping up of the Gaza war, including the bringing home of the 130-odd outstanding Israeli hostages. So they're on the streets essentially saying, we think that you are responsible for this, Prime Minister, and we want you to step aside so that someone else, because it's not going to be you, can be the one to wrap all this up. But that's the main thing that you see in the protests. I do want to stress one thing, though, which is that the United States feels like a nation that's been cut in two or three or even more than that. But you have no idea until you've seen what it's like in Israel. You find people in Israel who are living lives that are super secular, that are, you know, beach loving lives of secular lives in places like Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. And then you find people who are living lives by their own choice that are extremely religious, very conservative, sometimes very bellicose in their attitude toward the Palestinians and even other countries. Mm-hmm. In other parts of Israel. So it's really a split country. And I think we saw those splits even before the October 7th attacks. Now, of course, the stakes have just gone up and up and up. But yeah, the people who are probably most in the camp that you would be in, are the people who are most like what you find in the United States, are the ones who are saying Netanyahu is the impediment for going forward.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing about this, Graham. I've not been to Israel as many times as you have, but I've been there a few times over the course of my life. This goes back decades now. When I was a kid working for Tom Bradley, the mayor here in Los Angeles where this studio is housed. I've been there a few times, and on every trip I was there, I sensed and saw exactly what you described. There's always been this dichotomy, as it were, amongst the Israeli people about this ongoing war, because this is just the latest iteration. It's been going on for centuries, right? For decades. And it is fascinating to hear you say now, to describe now, these different factions inside of Israel. And I saw these same factions decades ago on my very first trip. So that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Except, you know, one thing that has changed a lot is demographics. Mm-hmm. There was a whole generation of Israelis who were basically labor leftists. So they were on the side of an internationalist socialist left, and they ran the country, and they were mostly descended from Europeans. And now, even though they're being led by Netanyahu, who is descended from European Jewry, and he's on the right. Mm-hmm. Now that side of things is mostly coming from other places, and they're less interested in having a European style social democracy. They're more interested in having a strong Israel that's mm-hmm. more religious than it has been in the past, and that maybe wants to, in some cases, in the very extreme right, wants to actually see Palestinians wiped off of their historical lands completely. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty shocking to watch that change over the course of the decades I've been going back.
Yep. Once again, to your text, The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. What do you think that we Americans miss by only seeing this situation from the outside and not from the inside. And to some extent, there's no way we can see it on the inside because we ain't on the inside. It would help if many of us broaden the media sources that we read to get a more holistic view of what's happening, not just in the Middle East, but indeed around the world. That's another speech for another time. I'll get off my soapbox in that regard about how one source so many of us are in this country. That said, my question, what do we miss in this country by only seeing what we see from the outside and not from the inside?
I think, first of all, it's exactly the right question to ask. It is, how can we understand this conflict better, even though we're not in it? And, you know, we're lucky enough not to be in Gaza right now with bombs raining down on us. We're also lucky enough not to be in Israel, in a country that lots of people think it shouldn't exist. And that's not a view that most people have about countries, that they should just stop and close up business. So I think that the first thing you need to do is to make sure that when you're consuming media about this, that you're looking for both sides. And for a long time, you couldn't get any real pro-Palestinian voice in the way that you can right now. And there is an understanding, as I mentioned, that students certainly have, but I think a lot of people who in the past wouldn't have it at all, they have a sense of what it might be like to be losing your home in a war, to being forced out. And that is, to say it's rough would be an understatement. I don't know a way to express what it's like to lose, you know, 10 members of your family in airstrikes in the last 6 months. Now, on the Israeli side, the attack that happened there is an attack that is unlike anything that most living Americans have ever seen. The October 7th attacks were against the Israeli peace-loving left. They were against the ones who wanted to live as close to Gaza as possible because they thought they could be friends with Palestinians. And so I think it's difficult for Americans likewise to understand what it might be like to be an Israeli and who sees the people who are the most insistent that Israelis and Palestinians, that Arabs and Jews can live in peace, to see those people slaughtered before their eyes. So both sides have this tremendous challenge that they pose to the rest of the world in trying to sympathize with what has happened to them and understand why why they have such strong views about what's going on in the Middle East right now.
Yep. Let me ask you this question, perhaps as the exit question. I got about 3 minutes to go. We shall see. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but you do write for The Atlantic. And The Atlantic, like every other major news outlet, is covering this campaign and trying to figure out what it all means. I'm just glad that I have to spend a half hour talking about Donald Trump today. We'll do that maybe again tomorrow, but I'm taking a Trump hiatus today and talking about that. I mean, you know, things are bad, but I'd rather talk about the Middle East than Donald Trump. You know, it's bad. We'll come back to Trump maybe tomorrow. The trial continues, but the media obviously is covering this campaign. You write for The Atlantic, as I mentioned a moment ago. And again, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I wonder what your sense is of what, if anything, that Joe Biden can or must do between now and November to not lose a complete swath of the American electorate over this particular issue.
You know, it's interesting. Being in Israel, you meet some people who think, oh, Donald Trump was great for us. You know, he was in favor of moving the embassy to Jerusalem. He was in favor of the Abraham Accords, which got us peace with UAE and and perhaps someday even with Saudi Arabia. And so I think that one thing that what some people expect is that Donald Trump is the candidate for Israel. And I'm not even sure that's the case anymore. Joe Biden, remember, has been active at the very, very forefront of American foreign policy for decades. And those include decades when Israel was, as I say, that the main way that the United States saw the Middle East. So I think we've got two candidates, and it's not clear at this point which of them is going to be, when you really look at it, more alienating to people who are concerned about the possibility of Palestinians living in peace and having a state of their own. It's really unclear which if either of them is going to be a satisfying candidate for someone who's looking at that as one of the major issues in deciding who to vote.
Mm-hmm. Here's the extra question. I lied. I got time for one more right quick here. What's your sense then, speaking of the American electorate, how significant, central or not, this issue or these issues, that is to say foreign policy, will be when they vote in November? I mean, I ask that because we're spending all of our time talking about this conflict, and we should, because it could, if run amok, lead to World War III. I get that. I'm not naive, neither are you. We're spending a lot of time on talk radio and beyond in this country talking about this issue. I'm not so sure it resonates with voters, though, if people are going to make decisions on who they vote for based on a foreign policy issue.
Yeah, I think there's some reasonable doubt about whether this is going to be the issue that makes people change their votes. I think just today there was a poll that came out asking people what they cared about most, and they were saying jobs, mm-hmm. they were saying inflation, sure. they were saying the usual things that concern people. And the Middle East, Israel was way down at yeah. number 12 or yeah. so. And I think that's actually kind of a shame. We should be thinking about the world outside of us yeah. more, because, of course, people are dying and so forth. But also because these places, they have a way of coming back to us. I mean, yeah. you cannot just ignore Ukraine. You cannot just ignore Israel and Palestine. Yeah. And then just hope they resolve themselves in a way that doesn't touch us. So no. I think we should be thinking about those.
No, possible. I think you're right. I couldn't agree more. But then again, we wouldn't be Americans, would we? If we thought about others and thought about the world and thought about our engagement, we wouldn't be Americans. I digress on that.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we should be American, but we should be the best Americans we can be.
No, I could not agree more. Of course, I was being tongue-in-cheek. You and I are on the same page. His name is Graham Wood, staff writer for The Atlantic. His book is called The Way of the Strangers, Encounters with the Islamic State. Pleased to have had him on, Tavis Smiley. Graham, good to have you on, man. We'll talk to you soon.
It was a pleasure, Tavis. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward.